Welcome to the Beyond the Diagnosis podcast with me, Dr. Kylie. I'm so glad you're here. If you find this empowers you to take back control of your health instead of relying on the system in any way, please share this with three of your friends. Invite them to come join us. Are you ready? Let's dive inside.
Have you ever thought about your home making you sick? Well, I hadn't either until I got on this interview with Christine. And this is what she specializes in. This is her story. Listen in and just think to yourself, is my home making me sick?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening to this on the podcast or if you're here with us on the summit, we're lucky to have Christine. She is coming to us from California, but she's a Utah native where I am. And she's like, luckily we are blessed to have her because she's actually a nurse practitioner coming from a whole different standpoint. So I don't know how you were in school, but I'm sure it was very frustrating. Like myself, what did we do? We played the game and now we can do what we need to do, right?
Correct. Yes. I really did reach a point where I was super frustrated in my job. And I just recognized that there needs to be a better approach. And of course, I had my own struggles with my own health issues where the system had failed me. So that was a real epiphany for me that we need to start looking at the body in a different way. And of course, working in the system, that was really challenging because we are,
yes.
You know, we have only a certain amount of time and we have been trained to sort of address problems in a particular way. And as you sort of evolve as a practitioner, right, your education, your knowledge level, you just start to have more awareness about what's really going on with the body.
Your frustration with lack of results. Yeah.
Well, lack of results. And I felt like, honestly, that I was creating more problems and I wasn't resolving the problems. And I didn't like the idea that I was keeping patients in the revolving door on the hamster wheel of their illness. Because I'm all about solutions and I want people to carry on and not have to really come back to see me other than for just like maintenance things. But right. The fact that I was giving them so-called solutions that were creating additional problems, it was just a revolving door that really was frustrating for me. And I sort of experienced that firsthand. And that was really the impetus for me to start branching out and look at other ways of addressing the body. So really the whole foundational issue and looking at the nutritional deficiencies and looking at toxicity levels and how those play into our biochemistry and how our body actually functions was really an eye-opener for me. So that started in 2013, you know, after my breast cancer diagnosis. That's really when I took a deep dive into nutritional balancing, minerals, the epigenetic puzzle, and just how toxicities are playing into that. So that was really sort of my initial stepping stone. And then from there, it just continued to expand.
Right. So before we jump into this in detail, Christine, I want to point out one thing here is it's not like we all get into healthcare. We all become doctors or NPs or you name it, for whatever reason, our main goal is to always help people. But it's the system that we are educated in that's failing us. And that's failing individuals. People often say like, well, you just hate doctors. I'm like, no, I don't hate doctors. What is happening is that the system that they're educated in is failing. It's failing them and it's failing the patients. So you and I, we both broke free. Like, I'm a certified chiropractor. So I went more of that route. Then in chiropractic school, I literally got suspended because I was trying to help this patient who had seen everybody under the sun, had all these normal lab tests, and I was taking that functional medicine approach to her, and the school I was at did not appreciate that. So they took away my training privileges for a week, but hey, I finally got that dang expensive piece of paper that allows me to put DR in front of my name, and now I can help people the way that they need to be helped, just like you. So before we jump in here, I want to share with you guys a little bit of Christine's bio here. So Christine's been a nurse for 25 years. She started in the pediatric and adult oncology. Later, she became a nurse practitioner when her husband was diagnosed with cancer. So walk me through that. You're in oncology. Your husband gets diagnosed with cancer. What did you do?
Well, at that time, you know, I still did not have enough awareness. The veil hadn't quite been lifted at that point. But what had happened is I went in one day and had my patient assignment, and I had a gentleman who was older, had the same type of pathology of lung cancer that my husband had, and it was just too close to home. And emotionally, I said, you know what, I need to make a change. So I sat down with my husband that night, and he knew how emotionally challenging it was for me because I was deeply concerned. And you know, I feel like the unveiling for me happened really in layers. So with my husband's diagnosis, that was sort of the first layer. And yes, going to nurse practitioner graduate school and becoming a nurse practitioner was great. But again, I was still indoctrinated and the system and the approach to health was the same. So I again reached another layer of frustration. But yeah, it just became too emotionally draining for me to go to work and take care of someone who had very similar diagnosis as my husband. And again, you know, looking at outcomes, my cancer patients didn't die from their cancer. It was really their treatment that compromised their organs and their systems. But, you know, we don't talk about that.
You said it, not me.
When we talk about oncology and we're looking at deaths and how it's recorded, there's so much information that is not provided, not included. It's not within the proper context. So my husband ended up passing. And again, he didn't pass from his cancer diagnosis as much as it was from the chemical toxicity and the radiation destroyed his body. And it, you know, his body, your body can only withstand and compensate for so long. So that was, again, I was young, still didn't have a lot of the knowledge. I did the best I could with the knowledge that I had and the awareness that I had at that time.
Right.
So
that is what we have to do. That's wherever you're starting, wherever you are at listening to this, start now. Just start somewhere. Start wherever you are. There are alternative paths. Okay. So how long did he fight the fight?
Well, he actually survived for 10 years. So we started out with the lung cancer and they gave him a very low, you know, they said maybe 5 years, he would make it 5 years. So he made it beyond that 5 years. And then we discovered happenstance when they did a repeat PET scan and they scanned part of his brain. There was an area that was hot. And so then we discovered that he had metastatic to the brain. So then we went in treatment for that. But ultimately what happened was that he developed a pneumonia. They treated him for pneumonia. From there, he developed lots of digestive issues and diverticulitis and just was really never able to pull out of it from there. That was sort of the slow, steady decline of being in and out of the hospital. And nobody was really approaching his health and his body from the standpoint of, okay, this is a gentleman who has cancer, who has been severely depleted with the treatments and the modalities that we've given to him. There was no discussion about replenishing and nourishing and rebuilding the body. Everything was really quite destructive, and including the hospital food. So looking back, there were so many layers of just the system did not help him in the end. So when I had my own cancer diagnosis, I knew at that point that my approach would be different. And I was going to take all of the lessons and all of the education that I've learned in the past. And then I was going to apply it to my situation. And if I recovered, then I felt a deep responsibility to then share that and bring awareness and try and empower people, because we should not be so dependent upon the white coats and the hospitals. There's so much power. I call it power to the people. I want each household, whether it's the wife or the husband or the grandma, to be that natural healer, to have that education, to have those tools so that they can be that natural healer for their household.
Yeah. I'm just going to pinpoint here. I started following Christine on Facebook a couple months ago. Girl, I love what you post. It is so awesome. So if you want to be more educated, feel more empowered, go check out, is it your full name on Facebook?
Oh, it's basically my name, Christine Knapp Phillips. So Knapp Phillips, K-N-A-P-P, Phillips, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S. First name is Christine with a C-H. And I really just try to post things that are bringing awareness to a variety of topics to spur someone's interest, because we only know what we know, but we don't know what we don't know. So that aspect of the pie puzzle of we don't know what we don't know is rather large. Yes. And so I really try to bring some attention to common topics in my world that didn't used to be common topics.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah. You know, I love it. There's a website called WDDTY. That's where I get a lot of my information, but it stands for what your doctors don't tell you, WDDTY.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's got all of your basic, like you can search diabetes or you can search fibromyalgia. Like you can search whatever you want to search on there. And that will come up with what your doctors don't tell you about that scenario.
Oh, great. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. So, okay. You were diagnosed in 2013 with cancer, took a different approach. What was your approach like? And now how do you tackle health problems?
Well, my approach was, first of all, I wanted to understand why did my body allow the cancer cells to take over? You know, so I started looking at all of the variables that play into that, because removing the tumor is not your long-term solution. So you really have to start looking at your biochemistry and your bioterrain and the things that are really down-regulating and causing the damage and just the body's inability to address these rogue cells. And so that was primarily the approach that I took. So that really brought me into learning more about epigenetics and methylation and MTHFR. So I did all of that. And then I did a lot of readings with the Gerson therapy and how to really nourish and support the body. And just...
Well, let's pause right there real fast, because MTHFR has dropped often. But people are still like, I don't know what that is. Methylation, I don't know what that is. So MTHFR is a gene. And what they have found is that it can be manipulated so that your body's ability to take B vitamins and use them is hindered. Was that cool? Is that how you explain it?
Yes.
And it affects, I mean, it happens in every single cell in your body. So it can affect anything. But that's what MTHFR and methylation is. And then you said a study. Walk us through what that study is.
The Gerson. I started studying the Gerson therapy, which is basically it's juicing. And really, you know, the benefit of juicing is that it really does restore a lot of the minerals and the nutrients. And it's very easily digested and absorbed. The problem that I ran into, though, is at that time, I did not know about oxalates. And a lot of the green juices and juicing protocols are very high in oxalates. So when you start to factor in other toxicity into your biochemistry and your illness picture, that can be really problematic. So I developed increasing fatigue and neurological symptoms. I developed frozen shoulders back to back. So my body was not able to handle the oxalates, which are a toxin to the body, and you can have both exogenous versus and endogenous. So the fact that I was juicing so much, I had created sort of a secondary toxic load unknowingly. So I'm always very cautious to talk about juicing. I love juicing. I love green juicing, but there needs to be a bit of awareness and mindfulness when you are going down that pathway and understanding how your body is going to handle those. And I discovered that I had high oxalates when I did an organic acid test after my second frozen shoulder.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I had no knowledge.
That's one of my favorite tests. That test, actually, what I tell people is that literally is determining the chemistry inside your body. Your body's ability to use what's there efficiently or not.
Yes. So, yeah. Okay. It's a very good functional test that provides so much information about how well your body is working. You know, you can pick up mold issues, you can pick up the candida issues, you find the neurotransmitter issues, the mitochondrial, you know, there's so many,
there's a lot,
so many issues that you can pick up with that, that it really is a valuable test.
Now, I don't know if you've come across this, but I have had multiple people on many occasions say that somewhere along the line, they've taken this organic acid test, also known as the OAT test, but whoever took it with them or whoever ordered the lab for them never even explained it. So here they have this test, these remarkable test results that are so useful, but whoever took it didn't do anything with it. So just know that that's out there. People in our field, they know that that test is available, but it's not the easiest test to interpret. So make sure you, before you go spending money on that test, make sure that whoever you're going to take that test for, make sure they interpret it or they can interpret it, because having a test and not knowing what it means is worthless. If you need me or Christine to do that, feel free to check it out. We'll do that for you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, I literally have pulled those tests from other places and then actually said like, oh, this is what that means, years after they took the test. So, okay, so walk us through this whole toxicity thing. And I want to speak toxicity specific to the home environment, because what I have found, like in the springtime, it's now fall, right? It's September. In the springtime, we did a bunch of yard work at our house, and we're in Utah, which is a desert climate, but we're chopping down trees, and I look in the middle of the trees, and these trees are chock full of mold. That never triggered in my mind that even though I live in a desert, there can still be mold issues. The second component was I had a patient at the time, he was 14, and on his knuckles would swell, and they would only swell for like 2 or 3 weeks in the springtime. So I finally realized that, you know, the ground is frozen. It's now thawing, mold. The leaves are on the ground. They're now thawing, mold. Like all of these things are mold related. So as soon as we gave his body support for the mold, the swelling went away. So I know you specialize in this category. Walk us through what we need to know and how you tackle this problem.
So with my health journey, you know, it was breast cancer, then it was Lyme co-infections, had a high viral load, but I was still neurologically very compromised, losing my memory at 43, losing my vision. And, you know, everyone was so focused on the cancer, the Lyme, the viruses, and nobody had really talked to me about my home environment. So in early 2016, when I heard a podcast about the home environment and mold, all the light bulbs went on for me, because nobody had said, have you tested your home? And I'm not talking about doing an air test. I'm talking about doing an ERMI test, an ERMI test. And that's collecting dust samples. And you want old dust samples of like 4 to 6 weeks in combination with the newer dust. But this dust is what tells the story in a home. And homes are made up of materials that mold likes to feed off of. It's, you know, there's water pipes in floors and walls. So it's very common to have water issues that are happening. Some are major, some are slow. But anytime you have a water issue that hasn't been addressed within a 24-hour period of time, it's going to start to develop mold and mold spores and mycotoxins. Mold is visible. Mycotoxins are invisible. And the body absorbs and inhales. We breathe them in. The mycotoxins can also be in food. But for me, when I'm trying to recover a patient, if their home is their toxic exposure, if that's their trigger, the treatment protocol that I put them on is not going to be sufficient until I actually address the home. So I have everyone assess their home environment from the beginning. That is like the first place that I want to start. I don't start with an OAT test. I start with an ERMI test. Let's assess the home environment. Let's make sure that there are not mold and mycotoxins brewing and keeping the body in cell danger response and in a high mineral burn rate and damaging the mitochondria, suppressing the immune system. So let's start there. And then from there, we work outward. So from that ERMI test, I can pick up, you know, is there an active leak going on? Is there a high amount of stachybotrys or cotomium, which indicates an active leak? Or are there secondary mycotoxins that are being produced from, say, an old water damage, an old renovation, an old remodel that was aesthetically, it was cleaned up, but the mycotoxins are still there. So my house, for instance, you know, lovely lots of remodels, upgrades. No one would ever have guessed that my house was toxic. And so when I brought in the inspector and they did the testing, yes, it came back and it was very toxic. And that was part of the reason why my body was not recovering despite the expensive treatments that I was going through, because I was doing ozone and HBOT. And I mean, I was doing a lot of different things that was, it was really quite costly, and they were all specialists, but nobody had talked to me and said, hey, show me the test on your home. Let's make sure that your home is your healing environment.
Well, this ERMI test, how do you get it?
The ERMI test can be ordered from mycometrics.com. It is the lab that I have the most confidence in. There is another lab out of Texas, but I have had some inconsistencies in some of the results. So I really am sticking with referring all of my patients to Mycometrics.
I mean, it's just like a kit. I've never even heard of this test, so I need to start utilizing it too.
Yes, it's actually, they have two options. You can do a vacuum canister collection, or you can do it's like a Swiffer cloth that you'll use to collect the dust. Mm-hmm. And that's what I recommend. So I will recommend they order their test kit, they run their HVAC system, and they allow the dust to collect for 4 to 6 weeks. And you'll want to collect the dust from areas that are going to collect the dust. So light fixtures, the frames around doors, picture frames, baseboards behind furniture. If you have hard surface floors, you can oftentimes collect from underneath the bed. This dust really does tell the story and some history on a house. So I always will start with that.
Well, everybody's going to be curious, what's the cost behind it?
It's total, it's just under $300. So you'll pay initially, I think it's $49 to order the kit, and then it's another $249 to have the analysis.
That's not bad at all.
It's a really valuable test kit. I oftentimes have patients that come to me after they've seen and been working with, you know, really famous Lyme doctors, Lyme specialists, autism. They've done a lot, spent a lot, done a lot. But nobody has really asked that question about the home environment. So I just feel like it's a piece of the puzzle that many are overlooking or minimizing, or they're assuming that they've done the proper testing.
Yeah. $300 is some change for what most people spend on these expensive, 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 top-notch quality treatments, and they get nowhere with it.
So right.
Check out Mold in the Home. I'm curious. If I'm in Utah, since I am, do I need to test in a specific season versus another season? Because like I said, it's more common in the springtime than it is in the other season.
Yes. I oftentimes, if you are in one of those four season areas or you're in an area where you have a freeze melt, I always want you to test the home when you're in that freeze melt season. So the spring or the fall. Because it will shift your indoor environment. And many people don't believe that they have an issue as far as a water intrusion, but I see many leaky basements. I see many problems with leaky ducts creating a negative pressure in the home, mm-hmm. Lots of chimneys. There's all kinds of issues that can be picked up in looking at an ERMI test. So I really encourage everyone, if you've been sick for a while, you're struggling, you're making short gains, but you can't sustain them, it's time to look at the house.
Yeah. My husband's a roofer, and I hear all kinds of stories about when they get underneath the shingles or the metal, and they actually see like the wood underneath it all, and it's got to go because it's all soaking wet. And that's just going to soak into the house. We covered the toxicity stuff. Is there anything else we want to chat about in regards to toxicity in the home?
Well, I would say that mold and mycotoxins are probably the first thing that I look at. And then the second part of that would be the EMFs and the Wi-Fi frequency. We know that the Wi-Fi frequency actually will increase the mold production and the mold growth. So it's really important to mitigate and get rid of that Wi-Fi that's in the house. For several reasons, not only what it's doing to the mold and mycotoxins, but also what that frequency is doing to the body. So we know that there's some DNA damage. We know that it's really working on that voltage gated calcium channel. So your mineral ratios are going to be hampered. When your mineral ratios are hampered, that opens the door for the heavy metals to really go rogue and take over. And many are dealing with a heavy metal toxicity, but they don't have the cellular vitality and the mineral and nutrient support to actually support that whole metal chelation process. So I really, you know, I don't recommend that patients sort of dive into that initially. We really need to focus on replenishing and nourishing the body and bolstering so that there is some cellular and mitochondrial energy to deal with that. And as you start to replenish those mineral receptor sites, you oftentimes see some of these metals start to flick off and chelate on their own. And that's a beautiful process because, you know, when we're talking about illness and chronically ill people, we really don't want to overtax them in our approach to recover them. And sometimes I think that this is overlooked. And although our intentions and our efforts are pure and good, sometimes I see patients are really further compromised and depleted, which is not going to move them forward.
Yeah. When I do detox with my patients, it's the very last thing we do, because you have to replenish and rebuild and provide the body the stores that it needs. And one of my patients right now, I'm sure you have a whole horde of stories too, but when she came to me, she had been seeing an herbalist, and that herbalist had her detoxing for like the last 4 years on multiple different herbs that push the detox systems. And every time she would push something new, it would just cause haywire. So I think we're doing like we're 9 months into it now, and she's got hair regrowth. She's gone back to work. She's babysitting with more kids afterward. Like, it's just completely transformed her. And we haven't even detoxed yet. Like, that's the final step. So there are a lot of people pushing detox. Yes, it needs to be done, but it needs to be done in a safe way. And you've got to prep the body for it.
Yeah, and we see that when patients have been exposed to certain toxins, we see a downregulation in those drainage organs. You know, these organs that are supposed to help mobilize out and detox, they have been downregulated. So to ask the body to detox and then have all of your downregulated organs blocked, you're really going to create more problems for them. So we want to honor the system, honor the body in the way that it was created, and support it in the way that's going to be like the least detrimental to our patients. And I feel like that, you know, if you're focusing on detox without addressing the toxin that may be in the home, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You're not a source.
Yeah.
Last but not least, let's talk in regards to these deficiencies. You've dropped mitochondria a lot of times. So for those of you who forgot your high school biology days, your mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cell. So if you recall back in literally high school biology, I didn't know I would talk about biology every day. I might have paid more attention back then if I knew that. But they literally take your food and convert it into energy in the form of ATP. And if you don't have healthy mitochondria and very high efficient mitochondria, I mean, the results are across the board. Everything from research has said like Parkinson's has even been correlated with mitochondria, definitely chronic fatigue. Like if your body can't use food that it's eating to make energy, you're definitely going to be chronic fatigued. And your body's ability to heal all reside based off of that mitochondria. So just think back, you have your cell, you've got the little teeny mitochondria. And I remember a research article, it's not just one mitochondria per cell. Like you literally have 5,000 mitochondria in every single cell inside your liver and 8,000 inside your heart. So those guys got to be working. I mean, you have that many in one cell. I thought that was crazy when I learned it. So, all right, help us out, Christine. What do we got here? Deficiencies in regards to mitochondria and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, so when I start to look at the deficiencies, that I first look at your minerals, the mineral ratios. So I'm a really big fan of hair tissue mineral analysis so that we can assess and see what are the mineral ratios and are they imbalanced? Are they imbalanced? Because the minerals are actually going to be helpful so that the vitamins can be assimilated. The minerals are also helpful to many of your biochemistry pathways. So think methylation, MTHFR, think transsulfuration. Minerals are also helpful for stomach acid. You know, so all of these things that are going to give the body energy, as well as intracellular hydration and to feed the pathways, we do not have enough minerals. It's going to be really taxing for the body. So I start looking at and replenishing your mineral ratios. And then from there, I want to start supporting the mitochondria. And I oftentimes see complex one is compromised, so they're going to need some NAD. I see that downregulated liver and gallbladder, so we oftentimes need to add in a layer of support there. I like to use TEDCA and liver drops for that. And let's see what else.
Right.
Yes, Cellcor is one of my favorite products, that TEDCA Plus or Advanced TEDCA. I can't remember, they just changed the name of that. And what else do I like to add in as far as deficiencies? I mean, there's so many different layers to it, but it's minerals, it's mitochondria, supporting the stomach acid, supporting the bile flow, the liver gallbladder, supporting the nervous system. So oftentimes there's a deficiency in your vagus tone. So you're going to have a real imbalanced autonomic nervous system. You're going to be probably more in sympathetic than you are in parasympathetic. And we know that when the body's in sympathetic and fight and flight, then we're going to have some issues as far as gaining health and recovery because the body just doesn't heal in that sympathetic. So I do like to address some of that vagus tone deficiency as well.
Right. Now remind them what the vagus nerve is.
The vagus nerve is just the primary nerve that basically innervates, you know, from brain all the way down to gut. It helps the body to basically rest and digest. So yeah. It's a very calm state. It's where the body doesn't feel like it's being under attack and having to just be in fight and flight all the time. So it really regulates a lot of different things. Your heart, the way your heart is functioning, the way that digestion is moving, the way that your body regulates temperature and metabolic processes. So it's just a really important area to focus on. And, you know, some that have been ill for quite a while, you know, they kind of can get locked into this sympathetic mode and they've got this trauma limbic looping system going on. So we have to shift them out of that. And there's different ways to do that. I think it varies for everyone, but I will oftentimes just start with doing daily vagal exercises with gargling, singing, humming, some deep nasal breathing.
I like that. I've never thought about doing the vagal exercises. So if you're listening to this at home, one of the simple things you can do, Christine, is the gargle exercise. Just walk us through that real fast.
I just have them gargle for like a minute twice a day. And you'd be surprised how many struggle with that. They can't gargle. And the gag reflex, it's just they have lack of vagal tone. And so it becomes really difficult to do that. So then I'll say, okay, I want you to just start humming. Turn on the music and start humming, a vigorous humming. If they don't like to do that or if they like to sing, I want them singing. And then the deep breathing is important because many who are under stress, they're taking such shallow breaths. So bringing more attention to their breath work and doing that nasal breathing. So it's in through the nose and out through the nose. And I always want the exhalation to be twice as long as your inhalation. And that can also help to calm down the nervous system as well.
Yeah, I was in a yoga class and they're talking about how it's like we don't want to puff out our stomachs. We want to keep our stomachs in tight. And that really has cringed our breathing.
Right.
Rather than when our stomach should go out and in with our breathing, we've now become just short chest breathers rather than deep stomach breathers. So,
yes.
All right. I love what we talked about today. Definitely approach the home, worry about those deficiencies. But Christine, if you were to tell us one place to get started, where would it be?
Well, you can get started on my website, benaturallywell.com or benaturallywell.net. And as far as the starting point, I want you to start with testing your home. So do that ERMI test on your home and then support the body to replenish and to bolster the minerals, the nutrient absorption, utilizing binders that are non-depleting, supporting the mitochondria where it needs to be supported, increasing that vagal tone, and then also just really being mindful and keeping your thoughts in a positive space. So a lot of my mold patients have come to me and they're locked in fear. Mm-hmm. And they cannot imagine that they can get back to living a normal life again. Yeah. So I really try to impress upon them that our body was beautifully made and created to compensate and to withhold and to regenerate, and that living a normal life again is possible when you take the right approach. So address the home, support the body, and keep your mindset in a positive space.
Now, I do have one question before we go here. Say your house comes back with mold. What do you do to get rid of it? Like, what's your technique?
Yeah, well, if there are active leaks, then we want those to be addressed. Okay. Right. So whether that's hiring a plumber or an HVAC technician, if there are negative pressure issues with your leaky ducts and leaky vents, we need to have those sealed up. And if there's just leftover residual from past leaks, then I utilize a technology called high-tech air, and that is able to decontaminate an air at the air and surface level. It's what I used in my home. I had a kitchen, a master bath, a laundry room, and an HVAC system that was contaminated. So I was looking at $100,000 of remediation replacement, and I just didn't have that money to do that. So I invested in two high techs. I ran those through my HVAC system, and then the other one I placed upstairs, and I ran those in 6 weeks. And at that 6 week follow up, my toxicity ERMI score had dropped down 7 points. And I really, at that time, was already experiencing a physiological shift towards the positive. Cognition was becoming better. My energy, my desire to want to interact, like things started to shift. And it just continued to get better and better the longer that I ran that technology in my home.
How long would you say it took for you, your home to clear up?
Well, I can tell you that I bought the technology in September of 2016. By November of 2016, I had actually started ballroom dancing. By the end of the year, I was traveling. I mean, I literally went from being horizontal for years, barely functional, to vertical and living life again in a matter of months after employing this technology in my house. It was quite profound for me, which is why I became such an advocate for it, because nothing else had moved the needle as much as utilizing this technology did.
Yeah, so that was by far the best treatment you ever spent money on. It wasn't even treatment on
it
you.
It was the best investment. And honestly, I have been able to use it going forward, because the reality is I do have poor genetics. I just become toxic rather quickly. I have to really be engaged in that process. And when I take a mold hit, I feel it. And so for me to be able to have a technology that I can travel with, that I can decontaminate my car with, it just makes life so much easier for me.
That's so cool. I'm definitely going to check that out. So take the ERMI test from, let's see here.
Mycometrics.com.
Yeah, there it is right there. Mycometrics.com. All of these details will be in the notes below, so you can check that out. And so definitely start cleaning your home. That would be a great place to start, especially if you're chronic. You say you've tried everything under the sun. We can almost bet that you haven't tried cleansing your home. So take a look at that environment. Thank you so much, Christine, for joining us. I certainly loved it. I'm definitely going to take this into consideration and start. I have a patient in mind. I'm going to go call right now because I think it's her home. So let's dive in. Let's dive into your homes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity to just share my message and bring more awareness to the importance of assessing and testing your home. I think it's a critical piece of the puzzle.
Now, Christine, you are in Southern California. Do you have a brick and mortar office?
I do not have a brick and mortar office. I work from home. I do a lot of telemedicine. I have patients almost in every continent now. So I do a lot of just telemedicine, telecommunicating, which has worked out great because with the technology that we have, it makes it really easy.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can work with Christine. So go check her out. Once again, her website is benaturallywell.net. Hopefully you'll have some more people to take ERMI tests with. All right. Thanks, Christine.
All right. Thank you so much.
Wasn't that just super good? Now, I know she used some medical terminology, and I tried to help when needed, But all you need to know is ask yourself, is your home making you sick? It could literally save you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and months and months of the hamster wheel that is sickness and chronic disease. If you think you know somebody who might fall in these shoes, who's tried everything under the sun, share this with them. They might be missing the one puzzle piece that no one's ever talked to them about. Is their home making them sick? Pretty cool. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Talk to you next week.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Beyond the Diagnosis with me, Dr. Kylie. If you enjoyed this and you learned something new, if you felt empowered in any way, please go invite three of your friends to come join us. And then meet me right back here again next week.